Hello, everyone. Paimon will be enjoying summer break with his family over the next couple weeks. In the meantime, we have planned a great and informative video for you to watch. This week, we will be showing the first part of Slave Nation. This informative documentary was co-produced by Freedom Law School. It dives deep into the reality surrounding the IRS and federal income taxes. Enjoy this educational content, and we look forward to returning back to our normal live broadcast after he and his family return from their trip in a few weeks.
The government collected record income taxes in the latest quarter.
Back to the IRS expected to collect over $2.5 trillion in individual taxes this year.
It was shocking in the initial budget request for the IRS how many guns they were asking for.
January 6th, the people right now languishing in this political gulag in D.C. is nothing compared to what can come. And as Libertarian Party activists, I organize speeches like we have here. And I got tired of meet, eat, and retreat meetings. Talk about the problem. We all know about it. But what you gonna do about it? So I'm gonna show you a real plan to drain the Washington, D.C. swamp. My name is Paimon Motahedeh. I have not paid any federal income taxes for over 30 years.
Today we're going to talk about taxes.
Taxes.
Taxes can be a little tricky.
Are you a patriotic American? Eager to do your part? Then there's something important you can do. Shall I? Your income tax.
The IRS is planning to hire special agents who carry guns and make arrests in all 50 states.
Well, we've been telling you about Democrats' plan to expand the IRS with nearly 90,000 new agents.
New special agents must be able to legally carry a firearm, and if necessary, you've got to be willing to use deadly force.
And if I don't pay up, I'll go to jail for tax evasion. I'm crazy enough to take on Batman, but the IRS, no, thank you.
Americans can't make a buck without Uncle Sam reaching his dirty little paw down our pants.
They say we have to have a way to pay for it. What do you mean pay for it? Why can't Washington do with less for once?
Our tax dollars are funding the development of artificial intelligence and machine learning technology that will allow the government to easily discover problematic speech.
When you do your taxes, the IRS doesn't send you a receipt. So just where does all that money go?
Did you use that $916 million loss to avoid paying personal federal income taxes?
Of course I do. Of course I do. And so do all of her donors, or most of her donors. I know many of her donors.
Thank you.
it. So, the topic we got for tonight's Freedom Hour recording is, let's see if I remember right, that since 1913, the people of the states were never required to file income tax, right? Am I set up properly? Okay. Alright, let's get this straight out. Hold on, get it right. Okay. Let's do it.
Hello, my friends. I am Peyman Mottahedeh, the president of Freedom Law School, which I created in 1996. In this presentation, I will show you how you can legally and safely take part in defunding the corrupt federal government deep state, enrich your family and your life, and restore freedom at the same time.
As you all know, we watch this program in the federal tax laws, Title 26, Internal Revenue Code.
I was born in Iran in 1962 in a Jewish family. And I used to sit next to my father, speaking with his friends and relatives about politics on a regular basis. I learned a lot about the Arab-Israeli conflict, about America and the West versus the Soviet Union, and the Iranian politics, where you were not allowed to criticize the king, the Shah of Iran. And if you did, you could have been simply kidnapped, put into jail for who knows how long, never a jury trial, tortured, and summary trial or executed. Came to America in 1977. As a child, I got to see American TV series of 1960s. Clint Eastwood, John Wayne, all those things. And the image of America that, you know, the country where is based upon freedom.
Would you let me? I call that bold talk for a one-eyed fat man. Fill your hand, you son of a bitch!
America was fundamentally created differently. So, coming to America at age 14, I thought I was coming to a land of the free and the home of the brave.
How does it feel? Feels like times have changed.
But within a few years, I found out, wait a minute, this is not the free country that I saw portrayed on television.
I want to know why a private, unauditable banking organization, the Federal Reserve, is in charge of the money supply, using the IRS as bouncers to strong-arm anyone who opposes the club, using unauthorized revenue agents to collect $40 million an hour in interest from hard-working Americans. I want to know why Congress doesn't print the money itself and eliminate income taxes altogether. I want to know why the IRS and the Department of Justice won't meet with us, answer our questions, and prove us wrong so we can put this baby to bed.
My name is Dr. Sherry Field Jackson. I am a retired CPA, certified fraud examiner, and a former IRS agent. I originally thought that I was doing my duty as a citizen of the United States, helping the country collect the taxes and take care of the things that government takes care of. But I started seeing things.
The larger corporations, you never see the owner. You never see the president, the vice president, any of these people. They'll send their CPAs and attorneys in to scream at you. So they try to send someone in to intimidate the IRS, whereas the small businesses, the IRS would come in and intimidate them.
So you go out and do an audit on a mom and pop company, and let's say they end up owing $10,000-$20,000. That's devastating for them. They don't have anybody to help them do anything about it. But then as you get up into the larger partnerships and corporations, the CPAs and attorneys would literally make deals with the attorneys at the IRS.
My realization that America was not quite a free country started big time when I took my first economic classes in college. That's what I've learned, that the Federal Reserve is actually privately owned. It's not part of the federal government.
And that is money coming from the mouths of your children and the college education funds of your grandchildren. All the while, the children and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren of the Federal Reserve owners never have to work a day in their life, and that is wrong on so many different levels, people.
The thing that broke the camel's back was when I found out about G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. It was about 900 pages, and I could not put that book down.
Picture a party of the nation's greatest bankers stealing out of New York on a private railroad car under cover of darkness, stealthily hieing hundreds of miles south, embarking on a mysterious launch, sneaking onto an island deserted by all but a few servants, living there a full week under such rigid secrecy that the names of not one of them was once mentioned, lest the servants learn the identity and disclose to the world this strangest, most secret expedition in the history of American finance. The results of the conference were entirely confidential. Even the fact there had been a meeting was not permitted to become public.
The servants must under no circumstances learn who we are, cautioned Senator Aldrich. What can we do to fool them? Asked another member of the group. The problem was discussed. I have it. Let's all call each other by our first names. Don't ever let us mention our last names.
For 9 days, the rule for first names only remained in effect. The secret meeting on Jekyll Island in Georgia, at which the Federal Reserve was conceived. The birth of a banking cartel to protect its members from competition. It is not federal, and there are no reserves. Furthermore, the Federal Reserve banks are not even banks. 1/4 of the world's wealth was represented by these groups is probably conservative. This was the roster. 1. Nelson W. Aldrich, Republican whip in the Senate, business associate of J.P. Morgan, father-in-law to John D. Rockefeller, Jr. 2. Abraham Pyatt Andrew, Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Treasury. 3. Frank A. Vanderlip, representing William Rockefeller and the International Investment Banking House of Kuhn Loeb and Company. 4. Henry P. Davison, Senior Partner of the J.P. Morgan Company. 5. Benjamin Strong, head of J.P. Morgan's Bankers Trust Company. 6. Paul M. Warburg, a partner in Kuhn Loeb and Company, a representative of the Rothschild banking dynasty in England and France, and brother to Max Warburg, who was head of the Warburg Banking Consortium in Germany and the Netherlands. The basic plan for the Federal Reserve System was drafted at a secret meeting held in November of 1910 at the private resort of J.P. Morgan on Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia. Those who attended represented the great financial institutions of Wall Street and, indirectly, Europe as well. The reason for secrecy was simple. Had it been known that rival factions of the banking community had joined together, the public would have been alerted to the possibility that the bankers were plotting an agreement in restraint of trade, which, of course, is exactly what they were doing.
In November 1910, I was invited to join a small group of men who, at Senator Aldrich's request, were to take part in a several days conference with him to discuss the form that the new banking bill should take. Well, the conference closed. The rough draft of what later became the Aldrich Bill had been agreed upon. Paul Moritz Warburg, 1930.
What emerged was a cartel agreement with 5 objectives. Stop the growing competition from the nation's newer banks. Obtain a franchise to create money out of nothing for the purpose of lending. Get control of the reserves of all banks so that the more reckless ones would not be exposed to currency drains and bank runs. Get the taxpayer to pick up the cartel's inevitable losses, and convince Congress that the purpose was to protect the public. it was realized that the bankers would have to become partners with the politicians and that the structure of the cartel would have to be a central bank. The record shows that the Fed has failed to achieve its stated objectives. That is because those were never its true goals. As a banking cartel, and in terms of the five objectives stated above, it has been an unqualified success.
Actually, that's what I love to do. Don't even like the practice of law that much. That's another story. I'm trying to think where all my diploma stuff like that are. No. Maybe is this down here? Here we go. Well, no. So, this thing is, as you can see, the first thing was to find out how much the wind affects mileage. So I chopped the front of it, and it did get better mileage, about 2.5 miles per gallon at highway speed. And then now we're doing other experiments with it, water injection. Eventually I'll convert it to electric also, but it'll be a hybrid.
Yeah. You
go to a car show or something like that, and these guys get their engine compartment perfect, and every wire is perfect, you know, and of course I love that, but this thing here, I'm just changing things all the time, so it's been a while. I haven't touched it in a few years since I went in the hospital, but anyway, someday it'll be really, really, you know, show worthy. My name is Peter Gibbons. I am an attorney living in Nevada, Carson City, Nevada. Been practicing law for about 25 years, licensed in California, many federal courts, and also in the United Kingdom as a solicitor. As a young boy, I was pretty normal. Not a lot happened, but I was very, very inventive. I've always been interested in science. I was on my way to becoming an engineer. I was actually standing in an unemployment line, and there was this little guy in front of me, and I'm watching people go up to the window where they sign up for unemployment, and the woman behind the desk was calling out, you know, next, next, and then the first thing she would say to the people was Social Security number, like as a question. It was more of a statement, but it was really a question. And of course then the first person, you know, comes up and he whips out his wallet, shows her his Social Security card, you know, in his wallet. Then the next guy walks up and he kind of does this and scratches his forehead a little bit, you know, and recites his Social Security number. And this same body language between, you know, showing her, the person the card, and kind of scratching their forehead and reciting it, that same body language repeated itself several times. And I'm watching this as I'm standing in line, and I just said audibly, I said, "We don't need no stinking chip, we're already there." Because, you know, if we talk about the mark of the beast and being chipped and all that, and here it's like we've self-chipped with this Social Security number. So this little guy in front of me, he looks up at me and he says, "I have a friend who stepped out of the system." Now, being a freedom lover, my little freedom antennae went up, and I started asking him a bunch of questions, and he said, "Well, there's this group meeting here in town." And that was down in Southern California at the time. So I started going to these group meetings. It was all about taxation. And they're bringing out all these different authorities about, you know, taxation in America. And it's becoming pretty clear to me that as an American, I don't think I owe this tax.
It's actually very simple. Congress tried to enact an income tax in 1894. The Supreme Court said that's unconstitutional. When the Supreme Court says something is unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional. They tried again in 1913, and the Supreme Court said the 16th Amendment conferred no new power of taxation. So, if they didn't have it then, and they didn't get it, they don't have it. There is no constitutional basis for a tax on the wages of Americans living and working in the 50 states of the Union. Period. End of argument.
This woman came to me. She said, "Miss Jackson, there's an ad in the USA Today, and it says the income tax is a fraud." So I went out and found a paper stand, got the paper, and I opened it up, and there was an article, full-page article in the USA Today that was put there by We the People Foundation for Constitutional Education. There were two things in that article. First of all, Joe Bannister was a former Criminal Investigation Division agent. He had written a report after he did his own research, and I ordered two copies of this, which was turned into a book. I said, I want to see what this other IRS employee was saying. But the thing that caught my eye and made me start doing my own research was a challenge by a man named William Conklin in this USA Today ad. It said that he would give $50,000 to anyone who could prove that we are liable for the income tax. So at that point, $50,000 looked good to me, and I started doing research.
A friend of mine, Bill Conklin, told me, "Hey, Paymon, this guy's going to call you, who is a special agent with the IRS's Criminal Investigation Division, and he's checking out what we're saying about the income tax, how they've been scamming the American people. But I think he's a real guy. He's genuine." So I said, okay, I'll take his call. And sure enough, a little bit later, Joseph Bannister called me and said, "I'm here on my time off, my personal time, looking at this IRS, you know, income tax issue. Please help me give a warm hand of welcome to a man who's waking up more people to the fraud of the income tax, Mr. Joe Bannister."
My name is Joe Bannister. I served for 5.5 years as an IRS Criminal Investigation Division special agent.
Joe Bannister was IRS Criminal Investigation Division. He was a very, what I would call, by-the-book sort of guy. Most of his family was in law enforcement, and he wanted, being, you know, to carry on that tradition. He was also an accountant and a very thorough accountant.
One of the extra duties that I signed up for was recruiting. One of the recruiting tools was to have a poster of Al Capone, how he was investigated by the Internal Revenue Service, and that you know, he was brought down not by all the gun running and various crimes, but with an accounting investigation, a financial investigation. So the IRS would tout, and I don't know if they still do today, that only an accountant could catch Al Capone, and that they encourage us to be an accountant with conviction.
My dad was an accountant. You know, he had the whole shtick, the dorky pocket protector.
I have a pocket protector.
I had a case, and I closed the case. It was maybe $150,000 case. And the protocol at the IRS at the time was, if there was an appeal, the case came back to the agent, which would be me, then I would give a rebuttal. Well, I sent the case off, and one day I was passing the secretary's desk, and I saw that case on her desk. I picked it up, and they had bypassed me, and they closed the case. So I went to my manager, and I said, "What's going on here? I didn't get a chance to say anything about their appeal. I didn't get a rebuttal." And my manager said, "Sherry, leave it."
My first day at the IRS was quite a culture shock. I remember sitting at in my cubicle, and because I was literally the first day, I had no casework. Coming from the private sector and from my upbringing, I didn't want to be getting paid for doing nothing. So I saw some books up on the shelf, which was basically the Internal Revenue Code. I decided I would look into those books because I'd be enforcing those laws that were in those books. And my boss, who was actually a former Marine, and he became an IRS special agent, he was the supervisor, and he came over and he said, "What are you doing looking in those books?" And I said, "Well, I thought I might check out the actual laws that I'm going to be enforcing." And he said, "You need to close those books. You're not a CPA anymore. You're an IRS special agent." And I just thought that was extremely bizarre. But I did what he said, closed the books, and you know, went about my business. But researching and opening up the Internal Revenue Code was a no-no.
I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. I'm going to put this baby to bed. I'm going to win this $50,000. I'm going to pay off some bills, and I might have a nice vacation. I thought it was going to be really simple because, again, I had my codes and regulations with me from the IRS. I had the research right there. And as I looked and looked at the codes and regulations and looked at what other people were saying and looked at what they were presenting, time kept going on, and I wasn't finding something solid that said you have to pay the income tax.
What happens when we get into the tax law is you see this kind of muddying of the water on steroids. And so if you go to an accountant or whatever, they're all caught up with that minutia. And nobody ever takes a step back and says, how did we ever get here?
About 3 years into my career at the IRS, I was listening to a talk radio show, and she was saying on this radio show that the income tax was a voluntary system, that the vast majority of Americans were not required to pay the income tax. So if you can imagine me driving around in my government car with my handcuffs and my Sig Sauer 9mm and my bulletproof vest, listening to this woman say on the radio to everybody in the Bay Area that the income tax, you know, isn't mandatory. And I thought, you know, lady, this tax ain't voluntary. It's mandatory.
Folks, let me remind you, everything I've been showing you is based upon the law from the Internal Revenue Code. This is the Bible of the IRS. This is the law that the IRS supposedly is trying to enforce. About 10,000 plus pages of tiny font minutiae. Yes, in complex language, but guess what? The key is at the end in the definitions, that they hid it from you.
The IRS has a manual called the Internal Revenue Manual. These so-called tax protesters claim that in the IRM, the IRS actually admitted that its jurisdiction over Americans was limited to Americans who are living abroad. In other words, not domestic Americans. And I thought that was crazy that the IRS would actually admit such a thing in their own internal manuals. So I went to the library that was within the IRS headquarters, and I began to look at their original manuals to try to verify whether any of this information was actually truthful, or whether it was, as the government frequently would train us, was just a bunch of BS that wasn't to be believed and you shouldn't even bother looking. And found that claim was 100% true.
So Joe in 1998 told me, "Pay my, I'm going to write a book about the income tax issue, what I found out." I said, "That's a great idea." And so he wrote it, and I proofread the book for him. The draft of the book, he gave a copy of that to his supervisor.
I went to my immediate supervisor, and his name was Bob. And I said, "Bob, I've been investigating the income tax for the last couple of years off duty, and I've really found many things that are very concerning to me. And I'd like to provide that information to you and my, the supervisors above you, so that you can evaluate it and see what we can do about it. Because, I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution."
And in that letter, he informed Charles Rosati that look, as someone who's taken an oath to uphold and defend the U.S. Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic, I cannot see how I'm not violating American people's rights. We're doing it wrong.
My boss, Bob, he did do as I requested, and he sent my report, and I had a transmittal letter explaining my purpose and my beliefs about the issue.
We're imposing a law that doesn't exist, that doesn't require the people of the state to pay income tax. And here is my report on the topic, and I'm required by your directions, what you've told us, and my duty to inform you of any wrongdoings.
So a couple days went by, and I didn't hear anything. And then I was called into my chief's office, and my chief handed me a memorandum.
So he started researching, came to the conclusion, I don't think I'm enforcing the law. Wrote a very nice explanation, I guess, to his superiors, to say, hey, I think we're doing this wrong. And instead of coming back to him and saying, Joe, we can explain all that to you. Let's get together and talk. Instead, they said,
we will not be responding to any of your concerns, and we will provide you with the paperwork necessary to tender your resignation. So I did not get any response. They immediately sent me home. They took my badge and my gun, left me with my pager.
Thank you for joining us for the first part of Slave Nation. Make sure to tune into next week's Freedom Hour, where we will watch the second half. Thank you all, and stay free.
Your head, he said to me, the answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you in your struggle to be free. There's only 7 steps to stop your taxes. He said, it's really not my habit to intrude. Furthermore, I hope my meaning won't be lost or misconstrued. But I'll repeat myself at the risk of being rude, there's only 7 steps to stop your taxes. 7 steps to stop your taxes. Did you study the law, Mom? Do not confess, best. There's no need to fear, dear. Just get yourself free. Listen to me, Lee. You don't need to discuss much. To Congress, you write twice and get yourself free. Read the guarantee, B. Join the Freedom Plan, stand. Then spread the word, GERD. Just listen to me. Study the law, Pa. Don't you confess, best. There's no need to fear, dear. Just get yourself free. He said it grieves me so to see you in such pain. I wish there was something I could do to make you smile again. I said I appreciate that. So would you please explain about the 7 steps? He said, why don't you read up on it tonight? And I believe that by the morning, you'll begin to see the light. Then he hung up, and I realized he was probably right. There's only 7 steps to stop your taxes. 7 steps to stop your taxes. Study the law, Mom. Do not confess, best. There's no need to fear, dear. Just get yourself free. Listen to me, Lee. You don't need to discuss much. To Congress, you write white and get yourself free. Read the guarantee, B. Join the Freedom Plan, stand. And spread the word, GERD. Just listen to me. Study the law, Pa. Don't you confess, best. There's no need to fear, dear. Just get yourself free.